And I'm trucking on, I'm trucking on. Well, I'll move her on down the line. Another time will do me fine. I'm trucking on.
Howdy, friends, and welcome to Trucking On. I'm your host, Ward Richmond. I really appreciate you tuning in today, and I hope you enjoy the show. What's up, y'all? Welcome back to Trucking On. Happy to have you here. Today, I just had the pleasure of doing a new podcast with David Birch with Inlight Real Estate Partners. And David is an amazing person. We just recently met in Austin at a conference, a real estate conference for Colliers, actually. And got invited to go to dinner with him, and I jumped on board. We're working on a lot of deals with Inlight right now, his company. And I had never met anyone at Inlight until we had dinner together, and we had an incredible dinner, sat next to each other. And it's just one of those dinners that I mean, we had immediate connection and just had so much in common and had the best time talking. So he told me he's going to be in Dallas, and we set it up. So he came by our office and we did the podcast, and this is the longest podcast yet. It tracks in at like 55 minutes, but all just packed with value from David, and really enjoyed this conversation. Hope you do too. Here we go. What's up, my brother?
Man, to say I'm excited is an understatement. And when I told everybody at the firm I was doing this, they were super jealous to the point where they were like, you could tell they were bitter, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean. my whole team, when I just told them I'm doing a podcast and it's going to be called Trucking On with Ward Richmond. I mean, like eye rolls.
Yeah.
But I understand the bitterness. It happens.
They wanted to make fun of it, but they couldn't. They could, you know, they just know they can't, they're not as extemporaneous as the two of us, right? So
did you tell them that you're about to live on the interwebs forever?
I'm just so thankful my legacy has a chance now with my kids.
And
we won't disappoint.
It does. Well, such a pleasure to have you here. Welcome to Dallas, Texas.
Glad to be here.
Where are you in from? Florida?
Florida. Yes.
My business partner, Zach, calls Florida, Florida.
Florida.
I call it Florida.
We call it the land of the free.
I love that.
It's, you know, I came from Atlanta about a year and a half ago. I lived my whole life in Atlanta, except my time in Athens, which was Atlanta East, you know, for college. And
but you grew up in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Grew up there. And it's a great place. I mean, Dallas is very similar to Atlanta, right? In terms of growth and diversity,
very similar
of industry and all that stuff. And we loved it there, but you know, when you have a 7 and 8 year old and you can live in a little beach community and where everybody leaves you alone, it's pretty nice.
My son turns 5 next week. My daughter is 8 and she really wants to move to the beach, as do I. So
I mean,
right there with you.
We're just fortunate we can make it work.
So very similar, you know. I love Atlanta. I go there a lot. I did Georgia Tech supply chain program.
So
spent 4 weeks there.
And then
just, you know, I actually started my podcasting career with Supply Chain Now. That's an Atlanta-based company. So I was going there almost every month before COVID to go record in their studio.
Yeah.
And then when COVID hit, they pretty much went remote.
Right.
And
were they Midtown? Next to Tech?
Yeah, I think they were Midtown. I forgot the name of the place, but it was some co-working.
Yeah.
I would stay in Midtown. It's like 10 minutes away.
Right, right, right.
I like to stay in Buckhead, though.
Yeah.
I like the St. Regis in
Buckhead. Well, who wouldn't? Yeah.
It's like, it's one of my favorite
hotels. Yeah, it doesn't disappoint.
Yeah. And we're going to get into hotels.
I've got not safe for work story about the St. Regis someday. We'll tell you after the podcast.
Why? Why after?
I don't want to get into the underbelly of Atlanta.
We're going to get into hotels in a little bit.
Okay.
And I think we need to go there because why not? I've discussed this with you, and we're both in the supply chain real estate business, industrial real estate, and I'm going to let you tell everyone about your business, but I've done a lot of podcasts, either on other people's platforms or hosting my own shows through Supply Chain Now or other avenues, and so many of them are about market trends and right. all this stuff, and I get forwarded real estate podcasts all the time, and you know, when you're doing what we do day in and day out, it's like, I know that already.
Right.
And
right.
it's kind of like, yeah, I've seen the stats. I know the trends. Like, that's my job.
Right.
But what I want to know is like about the people that we're getting to do business with. And then ultimately what I've found become great friends with.
Love
and
it.
As we grow up and the older I get, it's like the more of my close friends are through business. And that's my favorite thing about what we do is the people, right? So I want to know about the people, and I want to know about you, David.
Love it. Yeah.
And so I think from age 12 to 22, critical years in everyone's life. So
right.
I want to know what happened to you between ages 12 and 22, what your life looked like, any challenges you overcame or whatever, and like kind of what led you to that early adult stage
yeah.
of life.
What a mess. You know, I was, so 12 to 22. So I grew up on the south side of Atlanta, and I think we moved when I was maybe 13. So, you know, 12 was, you know, the only kid within a mile of my house. You know, the only place I could go where my parents felt like I was not at harm's way was the municipal golf course. You know, I would call it a lonelier 12-year-old year. Moved up to the north side of Atlanta, more suburban, slightly more, I guess I would call it more affluent, more kids, and was really kind of thrown in sort of unprepared. Right, because it's all these kids known each other for years and gone through elementary school together. So, you know, at the end of the day,
you're a new kid in school.
New kid in school, basically. From the south side.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a pony boy coming in with the socias.
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, say I made it through. All life is fine. My it's just, you know, what a mess in the sense of my emotional stability and sort of figuring out, you know, those years where there's, you're so pubescent, right? I mean, I think I heard
it's
a stat.
Tough like, when I went to middle school with all my same people I went to elementary school with, and it was still, those are still the two of the toughest years of my life. Really.
I think I heard like,
might have
guys
traumatized
like you and
me.
Guys like you and me, you know, at our age, we'll have we maybe have like one testosterone cycle a day. When you're 13, you have like 14 of them, you know? So you're just riding the wave all day long. So I was doing that in a new place, but it was all good, you know. And I eventually went to a great high school, went to UGA. Back then, I only applied to one school. Can you imagine
that?
You know, all the kids today start preparing at ninth grade for college applications, and back then it was so. I just applied to one school, went to UGA, and had a great time. That was really where, you know, I would say I started to come into my own. You know, having tons of friends, ton of fun.
Did you play sports or anything?
In high school, so I went to I played golf in high school. Went to a 2,500 person high school, lived out of district.
Wow.
So it was just and my mother taught school. So it was not something I was motivated
to do. Did your mom teach at your high school?
She taught at the middle school down the road.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just not something I was motivated to do.
Yeah. You know,
my parents never pushed me to it.
Yeah.
So
you played golf.
Played golf.
Got into, you went to UGA. Did you do like fraternity or anything like that?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. What fraternity?
Lambda Chi there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did they haze you?
I was really lucky I was lucky in the sense of my fraternity got, sanctioned the year before for hazing.
Yes.
So I came in at the right time.
Dude.
Like I was, it was a cakewalk.
Same with me.
It was a cakewalk. I'm pretty sure they've regressed back now, but so I came in at the right time. But you know, at the end of the day, hazing it's not a healthy practice,
right?
I mean, in some ways, I can see a little bit of character building that if you do it some of that the right way, but really you're just making enemies between the older guys and the younger guys, and the older guys are getting their rocks off because they have their own issues and they want to haze young kids. So
the exact same thing happened to me. I was a Sigma Chi at Brown, and I got there and they made it clear we are not hazing. They'd gotten in trouble for it or whatever. And the seniors, when I was a freshman, you could tell they were like so annoyed that they couldn't haze. And I was just, you know, my cocky self back then.
Right.
And you go like drinking beer and was like, oh, don't you wish you could haze me? Yeah. And I egged them on a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But
I got away with it. It was pretty good.
Did you play football at Brown?
I did for 1 year.
Well, that's enough. Freshman year. That counts. You don't have to say any more than that.
Yeah, I made. Hey, it got me into Brown.
Damn right.
And not my grades did not. It was football skills.
Yeah.
And I was recruited by the Ivy Leagues and the service academies. So
that's awesome.
I wanted to play football. I had some scholarship offers from like Southwest Missouri states of the world.
Right. Venerable institution.
I could have walked on at like, I remember Colorado State. It was like one of the bigger schools I could have walked on at. I probably, you know, you can walk on anywhere basically. Like you can bag your way on. My last guest, Summit Hogue, who's a tenant rep broker here, he walked on at Tech.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know,
Texas started, Tech.
He was on the special teams for all 4 years. Yeah. At Texas Tech.
Yeah.
Not Georgia Tech.
Yeah. That's a hard life walking on. I mean, you know, I had a friend, best friend, one of my good friends who ironically lives in Ponte Vedra now. He moved there totally unrelated to us. He went to Air Force, played quarterback.
Yeah. I went to Air Force on a recruiting trip actually.
And he played there a year, came to UGA and was like third string quarterback, you know, but he was up 5 a.m. every day, just killing himself.
It was a full-time job. I loved it in high school. And then I went to Brown. I never heard of Brown before. Never heard. It was like big down to Brown and Columbia that I had to decide between. I never heard of either of those schools.
Yeah.
And I went on the recruiting trip to Brown, liked it. And I canceled my trip to Columbia and said, I'm going here. And, you get to college and play sports and it's a different world. It's a full-time job.
Yeah.
Even in the Ivy League. And, you're doing film in the morning and then going to class.
Your day's set.
Classes are hard. I went to public school in Dallas, like, and I'm going to Brown, like these kids that they've been like trying to get into Brown since they were in seventh grade or something. And I didn't hear of it until 11th grade. And I'm like in non-honors classes at high school. Like I didn't even know what was going on. It's overwhelming. My shoulders started acting up. So it was just injury after injury. And when I quit, it was like, it was sad, and I was no doubt like mildly depressed because of it, because that was my life. But then the freedom that came with it was amazing. But also at Brown, like football's not like it is at UGA.
Sure.
People are like, you're a football player. So basically you got into this school.
Right. They judge you in a negative way. Yeah, right?
You don't deserve to be in here. Or at least I thought this in my head. Like, I don't know. But definitely football players in Texas high schools versus football players at Brown, it's like night and day how you're treated.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That was interesting. So I didn't want people to know I was a football player, especially like after I stopped playing football, I've dropped like weight pretty fast. And
you probably,
I didn't want to hang out with the football players because that was like, I felt like
a reminder that you had, quit.
I wimped out, you know?
Yeah.
So it was, that's a weird time. But then I joined the fraternity and
life was good.
Life was good. It was good 4 years.
Yeah. That's how
made lifelong friends, I assume.
100%. And I went straight through to law school in Athens. So 22 is where I, you know, get out of the undergrad. And I went straight through. So I call it prolonged adolescence up there.
I don't know that I knew you were a lawyer.
Well, I try not to be.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's nice.
I hung those cleats up, thankfully.
Yeah, but that's a good, you know.
It's a secret skill set. You know, I try not to. It's just like all it is an ability to be confident that you know how to read English. You know, people will read a legal document and they're like, I don't know what does this say? I'm like, it says what you think it says. And if it's unclear, it's intentionally unclear. And that's how the world works. So, but anyway, I did that for 12 years. So I went to UGA Law, graduated in 2005, started right out of, so law school works so differently than I expected. You could get an internship after your first year, right? With a good law firm. I mean, there weren't a lot of people who could do it, but I was lucky. I got one of two spots to be at Troutman Sanders after my first year of law school. And I didn't have any lawyers in my family. I didn't know.
Is that Atlanta?
It's a big firm in Atlanta.
Okay.
I mean, it's top four firm in Atlanta, yeah. Right? And
pay you?
They pay you like a first year lawyer. I mean, so I went back to Athens flush with cash.
What was a first year lawyer back then? What did they get paid?
Well, that's another story. I mean, at that point, it was $100,000.
Yeah. So you're getting paid like that much for an internship in law school.
Yes.
That's amazing.
But by the time I graduated out of law school, the third year of law school, my salary, because it was the run-up of O's.
Were you on like the, you were on like on the law review? Or you
no,
like,
that's my point. So I got this internship. I Googled it and they're like, I'm on the website of Troutman Sanders. It says, we've given 95% of our interns full-time offers historically. And I'm sitting there like February of my first year. I'm like, I'm done. I've got a full-time offer as long as I don't screw this up. So I was kind of, at that point, I was like a senior in high school who'd gotten into their first boys school. So I was able to enjoy law school a lot. There's B-level law review. They called it like International Journal or blah, blah, blah.
Did you intern there three summers?
I interned two summers.
And then that same place?
Split the second summer with another firm called Paul Hastings, and I ended up going there.
Okay.
Yeah. And, but from that, in my third year of school, this was the run up of this is 05, 06, right? The heyday of the free money days last cycle. And, so my salary went from 100, this is literally during my third year, 100 to 110 to 145 to 160. I didn't even show up yet.
Wow.
So
you're in law school and getting this.
I didn't get paid it, but I'm saying that my first year, my offer effectively was retroactively changed three times my, third year of school.
Yeah.
Because it was just a market for salaries for law firms. So anyway, got out in 05, held 06, held on like crazy to not get laid off when we're in commercial real estate, right? And law firm, all the business dried up. So we represented big banks on workouts, learned how to, put things back together, which was informative, right?
Yeah.
So just as good as learning it's kind of doing it in reverse. And, wrote out my career has always been about getting more. I use the term equity, which really means freedom, right? Like stuff that's mine, and if things aren't working out for me, I can take it with me.
Yeah.
And the first law firm, Paul Hastings, it's a big ass law firm. Atlanta was a satellite office. Real estate was a service practice to the M&A guys. So I was never good. Even the partners in Atlanta were really serving other partners in New York and LA. So I knew I was never going to have true equity, right?
Right.
If you don't have your own clients, what do you have?
Yeah.
So left there, went to a small boutique real estate firm, grew my book to where I could, sustain myself and had purely my own clients, my own relationships. Ended up going in-house with my very first client, because even as a lawyer, I didn't feel like I had true equity because I was relying on other people to create value or to pay me. They had to have ideas that I could then help them execute.
Yeah.
So then I wanted to go on the principal side. So I did that and was there for four years or so. And of course it was like 17 to 20.
In-house with who?
Stonemont.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and Stonemont's like development company.
Yeah. At the time we were more capital allocator than we were developer.
Yeah.
We were coming in behind developers on build-to-suits.
Yeah.
And by the time we left, we were pivoting more towards our own development.
Yeah.
And, but I was there from 17 to 21. And obviously it was a great time to be in the principal side of the industrial development business. So I got the opportunity to move to Florida and do my own. So there I was a minority owner of deals, no part of the firm. So I wanted, and that wasn't enough equity. I wanted more equity. I wanted more freedom and autonomy. So.
And now you have it.
Thank God.
So when did you start Inlight?
January, February of 21. Yeah.
And that's cool. Like right a year, you know, less than a year after COVID hit.
Right.
Did that kind of, I know like COVID changed a lot of people's just sped them up on ideas they were having. I know of a lot of companies that started around that time actually. Yeah. And the same thing happened to you. You were sitting there at home during quarantine, like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to go do this now. Like, let's go.
You and I've talked about it. I mean, but for COVID, there's no way I would have done what I did, right? Because we're all too busy. The world's spinning way too fast most of the time for us to consider a big life-changing decision, right?
Yeah.
Especially if it involves moving your family out of the state.
Why did you do that? Was that just did you just decide you want to go to the land of the free, Florida?
Just like serendipity, Florida or Texas? Really. I mean, my partner lived in where I live now.
Yeah.
He'd already lived there. And we went down there one weekend just to visit him because my partner's wife and my wife had never met.
How'd you meet your partner?
At Stonemont.
Okay.
That's not true. We met before when he was at his first job, his last job. It was his SunTrust, where he was doing real estate investing with the bank's balance sheet. But we went down there to introduce the wives one weekend and literally with no agenda. And of course, you know this, you've been married. All major decisions have to be her decision, right?
Right.
Her idea. So I didn't, you know, propose anything. We were just down there and it's like, man, this is a great place. Like, what do we have?
Good vibes.
What do we have?
I want to go. I need to go visit. Actually,
it's just laid back.
Yeah.
You know, it's just super. There's a lot of beach. There's a lot of beach towns that are really for tourists and vacationers. And then there's this one's really a little community, you know, which makes it awesome.
Well, sorry. What is it called again?
Ponte Vedra Beach.
Ponte Vedra Beach.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Just south of Jax.
Yeah.
So we're off track here. I'm sorry. I know we've got more questions than I've.
We're good. We're good.
So I guess we're in 22 to current. We're in the more.
Yeah. We've already done it. Like okay. We've already moved to 22 to current. We'd move right through. So you told us everything and here we are. And now tell us about your business.
Yeah. So the business.
And let me ask you a few more questions up front that you can be thinking about, like, what, you know, like, what do you do in your line of work that differentiates you from others? I know that's probably besides wanting more equity, you had an idea, like I want to execute in a different way. And I know you guys do this. So talk about that. And then, you know, like why would I hire you?
Yeah. Well, hiring me is gonna be tough. To be clear,
We
got to be partners.
Hire you to be my developer if I'm a tenant.
I know. I'm joking. But yeah. We founded the firm around four core values, which are alignment, generosity, respect, and balance, which we thought was really a combination that was not in the marketplace. It's such a, I don't want to call our business cutthroat, although, you know, you could probably call it that in some ways. You know, our business in many people's eyes is a zero-sum game, right? I mean, the tenant only needs one building, and if it's not mine, it's yours, and I will lose, you win. So it's, you know, it's this uber-competitive space, and we just wanted to do it a different way, not that we're not super competitive, because we are.
Wait a second. How did you come up with the core values?
Right. Learning from our mistakes. Right. I mean,
did you sit down in a room though and say, what are throwing words, different characteristics around? Like, what do we want to embody as a firm and as partners and all
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was a process and, culling it down to four was a challenge, obviously. And no offense to people who have integrity in their core values, but I'm like, if you don't need to specify that, I hope.
I was just like, do I have that? And I was like, no.
That better be a given, right?
For sure. We don't have that in our core values.
Yeah, because it's a given.
Yeah.
People know you. So anyway, it was like learning from our mistakes. So we've been in the past where we weren't along our alignment, the structure of our projects or our ownerships or our deals. We weren't aligned with our partners. We weren't aligned with our tenants. We weren't aligned, you know, it was effectively a den of thieves. You know, it was, as long as everything goes fine, everything will work out. But if it doesn't, we're not aligned and good luck to all of us, right? So alignment was a big thing. The way we do that is really just making sure all of us win together and lose together. And the circumstances for the win for me are the same as you, you know, because otherwise I may be rooting for one outcome and you're rooting for another and that's not healthy. It's not efficient.
Right.
It's friction. So there's that. Respect was really, how do we get the most out of our people? And, our, you know, respect the hell out of them, right? I mean, if you want to, in our business, we have the opportunity to be paid really well, right? And it's super competitive. You got to have super talent to win, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't respect even the young people, especially this day and age, they ain't going to work for you, or they're not going to give you your best,
right?
Or their best. And so, you know, making sure we had respect, and that was part of our day to day. Was, I don't care. You've got to have structure and hierarchy for, you know, so you don't drive yourself crazy, but you have to respect each other all on the same plane, right?
Yeah.
And so that's important for us. Balance is really, again, getting the best out of each other and understanding that we're our best and we have a balanced life. I mean, I refuse to believe that someone working 85 hours a week at Goldman Sachs is giving really good quality work above hour 55. It just isn't happening,
no.
Right? And we all know those guys sit in the office for the most part. They might sit there for 6 hours waiting for the MD to drop something on their desk to do, right? So we intentionally make sure people have balance in their life. Go out with your family, take a vacation with your girlfriend. Let's go play golf together as a firm. Let's be respectful and balanced in how we do that.
Working for the sake of working has always seemed like the craziest thing to me.
Right.
And I got I got fired from my first job in commercial real estate, and my boss, and maybe rightfully so, but at the same time, I think I was right about one thing, and he's just like, you're not working, hard enough. And like, well, I'm doing what I need to do. And
right.
I've always been like, work smarter, not harder. And if I can go do that, then that's the way I want to work. And I have a partner, Cole, who you know really yeah. well. Cole he likes to just like, he's way more of a grinder than I am. I'm more like, go get it done really fast and
yeah.
move on to the next. And I have like certain, like 5 things on my list each day. He's more of just like slow and steady.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I mean, we're different, but I'm not going to tell Cole how to work best
right.
for Cole. And I never worked well with others, especially superiors.
Right.
Period. Because I want the equity too.
Like right.
I've always been that way.
And you want to be given the freedom to be your best, right?
Yeah,
you know how to, you have ambition. You want to be successful. You don't need them to tell you how to do it.
I know
how to conduct yourself. You know yourself.
We know ourselves, and you have to, and then that goes back to respect.
Right.
And then I did work with Transwestern, and my bosses at the time were Sharon Morrison and Brant Landry, who were two good friends of mine, but they really came in as my first manager. She was like, oh, we get you. Like,
yeah.
Don't ever worry about coming into the office if you don't want to come into the office, and we're going to just leave you alone and let you do your thing. And that, like, somebody giving me that level of respect early stage of my career, I was less than three years into the business.
Yeah.
And they just let me do my thing. And then you know what happened? Like a year later, record year, was one of the top producers. And
yep.
then, that's all I needed is
yeah.
that vote of confidence to let me like do the things I wanted to do in the way that I felt I wanted to do them. So that's
again, our business, there's so many talented people in our business who don't get the chance to really execute on it or realize it because of the structure of their organization or what have you. I mean, you got to pick the right people, right? And not everybody's role is one that can be done on their free time or, you know, if you're an execution person, if you're an accountant, if you're a transaction coordinator, I mean, you need to be in the office and there's young people who need to be in the office because being around each other has always been beneficial, whether it's in yeah. the office, at the beach, whatever it is. Because there's just growth that happens there, knowledge share that doesn't happen otherwise.
And right? that's Cole for me too. Like, when I hired him, you meet Cole, he's like the most gregarious guy. He's definitely going to be on the podcast soon.
Yeah.
And super outgoing, super social. I hired him like, this is going to be like a sales titan.
Right,
and,
right.
And we like teached him how to cold call where we were sitting around like, pick up the phone. He's like, dude, I got to go to the bathroom. his hand started shaking. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, dude, like, I like,
it's a unique person. It's a unique trait.
I kind of like told him one day, like, dude, I don't like want you to be like an order taker. And he's like, I like being an order taker. It's like, damn, like, I had to process it for a second. Like, this is actually fantastic,
right?
Because I don't like to be an order taker, and he likes this, like the regimented transaction management, organizing all of this stuff and doing the RFPs and all of these, all this stuff that for me, I could do it, but I wasn't like
drive you crazy
getting high off doing it.
Yeah.
And I want to do the other stuff. I do want to go pick up the phone. I want to go meet with people and talk and, you know, solve big problems by looking at data. I don't want to put the data sets together as much. And because of that, I think, like, I'm hopeful we'll be business partners for life, you know?
Well, that's
like
why y'all compliment each other so well.
Yeah, and we do, and he's become just the other me, and I that can do all the things, and hopefully he views me the same way, and it's been amazing. And same goes for my other teammates, but he was my first partner ever, and hired him right out of college, and I didn't know what I was doing. I'd never hired anyone before, and so that's so cool.
Yeah, and it's knowing how to, that's the biggest challenge as a manager, is figuring out how to get the how your people work best. What is their best way to approach it, and then letting them do it and supporting it.
Yeah, so I think that's all good. And I mean, I think you guys, you're developing a lot of really cool properties, transload properties. You're getting into space that hasn't been as popular as like you're doing the big box stuff as well. But
we try to be a little bit more, you know, well, being in being the best in a niche can be really profitable, right? And and really set yourself out to where there's no one can compete because you're too far ahead in this niche, and for them to catch up is going to be too much work.
Eastern port markets, are your thing.
We really believe in logistics infrastructure, right? I mean, it's never going to be replaced. It's never going to be competed with. Port of Virginia, Port of Charleston, Port of Savannah, even the port in Jacksonville. You know, I mean, this COVID, I would not have said this pre-COVID. And you know this, being in the business and the supply chain, getting so much in the supply chain world as you do. You know, pre-COVID, corporate real estate managers, they were this is a CYA focus, right? They don't get paid to take risk. So why would they even consider, you know, a major change to their supply chain? Everything comes through LA.
Yeah.
It has for years. My boss did it before I did it. I got my contacts in place. Why would I change? Well, COVID took that deck of cards, just threw it up in the air, and they all fell where they fell. And everybody had to figure out, oh shoot, where can I actually get into port?
Yeah,
and the East Coast ports have really, as you know, they've blossomed so much post COVID. And you know, I love California for vacation, but as a investment, it's just. It's the toughest place in the world to do business, or at least in the States, right? So betting against California and betting on the East Coast and Texas is a lot of our thesis.
I think a big differentiator too is you're not the only group that realized this, but you're one of the groups that I find in doing deals in the Eastern ports has great land sites. So how do you find those land sites?
You know, you asked like, why would a tenant hire me? If we have a secret sauce, it's to be hyper-local. I mean, as a GP, as a sponsor, if we don't find the dirt before everybody else, then we're paying too much, right? And so we take our guys. They cover at most three markets. Most cover two. And our Atlanta guy covers just Atlanta, obviously. And there's two people who cover Atlanta because it's 700 million feet or whatever. It'll be the same when we get here. Because we want them to be, they got to know everybody.
Yeah,
they got to know every broker, landowner, economic development, tenant. I mean, you know it. They got to know every. So they get the call first. If you get the call first, you can get the better price. You can close without anybody knowing there's competition. And you could get favorable terms. So it's all about being in your markets and really investing the time and developing relationships there.
Do you have like a written out process that you use to train your teammates to go get in a market?
We have a... suggested
or a well-defined process, should I say?
No. I mean, that's maybe that should be a goal, but it's for us. It's let's hire the right people who want to make long-term relationships and make them go to their markets twice a month.
Yeah,
and help them introduce them to who we know, and then let them go from there. Right. So we're fortunate to have relationships in these markets because of our past success in Savannah. we pick up the phone and call the Port of Virginia. They answer. You know, we've had dinner with the executive director there more than once. Same with the port in South Carolina. You know, they're very gracious. They know that there's a lot of developers who a year ago could go out and build a big box, right? But we sat down with them and said, what do you need? What do your customers need, right? Throughput needs real estate. It needs warehousing, but it needs other stuff. It needs trailer parking. It needs container storage, and it needs transloads, right?
The transloads are just happening everywhere. I'm working on a lot of transload stuff right now.
I mean, they speed up the process, right? And they make it a more precise supply chain. So we're big into that. We've got one going in Savannah on a build-to-suit. We think we're almost there with one in Norfolk. Charleston's a challenge because you got to go. It's just so hard to find port proximate, you know, land big enough in Charleston, right? You got to go out 26 and it's a chance. Those guys would rather be in Norfolk or Savannah because they can get closer to the port.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a shift too. I mean, there's been all these big box warehouses built all over the country, obviously, but now with everything that's going on, I'm sure that's going to continue, but the transload, there's this new focus on the movement of the product more than the storage of the product. And
right.
That's what these transloads are about. They're not ideal from a development standpoint because you're not like maxing out, you're not eating the site as some developers say, and like maxing out like the site because you're building a small building with low coverage.
Oh, yeah, we got like 15% FAR.
All this parking.
Yeah.
Municipalities don't, I mean, the ports just kind of have to buy into it because the ports have to have that to make the ports really perform at the highest level, I think.
Exactly.
But a lot of municipalities, don't want you building these things.
Of course.
And getting them zoned because it's truck traffic and it's not jobs.
Exactly.
It's got to happen.
But it's commerce, right?
I mean,
everything they enjoy about their lives in terms of speed of goods flow requires this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're lucky to have gotten into that. And really, we were just pointed to it by the ports.
Right on. Okay. That's enough real estate shop
thank
talking.
Goodness.
Let's get into the good stuff. What advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh, man. Don't sweat the small stuff. And have confidence in yourself. But, you know, don't be arrogant. But you don't have to be meek, you know?
Do you feel like you were meek?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, for
Me
sure.
Too.
You know, I didn't really come into my own and become a self-respecting individual till at least law school.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, probably when you got that big ass check.
Yeah, more probably.
You got some money in your pocket. I mean,
I had amazing. Enough validation finally.
Yeah, money will do that. Like, it gives you confidence. It does. It's just like something that it validates what you've been doing and your hard work and like, okay, this firm wants me. I'm like one of two people that the just giant firm in Atlanta wants to hire and they're going to pay me this money. Like it's not even the money. It's getting that opportunity or getting hired by that first tenant or whatever.
Exactly.
It is.
The way I think about it is money is the trophy, right? If the currency were something different, I'd be just as excited to get that. That's just what we all compete for, right? It just happens to be money. I was validated enough. But at the same time, I would tell myself not to, you can't validate yourself with money either though, right? You've got to be, there's more to life than that. So I just want to be careful with that, right?
Yeah. And then taking your risks.
Like, 100%.
And going for it and then doing the work and then those risks.
Trust yourself to execute.
You're investing in yourself, which is it can be just as scary as investing in Bitcoin or something.
Right.
But not once you start doing it over and over. That's when that true confidence. And I think that combines with humility naturally when you do it, because you know, like this state of fear that you're in and the hard work required.
Love it. Exactly.
And most all successful people I know, and at least the ones I like to hang out with, they're packed with humility because nobody gets to the top without lots of struggles. And then when they get there, 99% of the time, they worked their ass off to get there, and
they made a lot of scary decisions.
Yeah,
right.
And they're not walking around like they were just handed something because nobody was. And if you really get to know them, and they may come across that way, you know, like celebrity type people.
Yeah, yeah.
But I bet when you like really sit down with them in a room, like you're going to see that
right.
humanity come through. So right on. That resonates with me. Let's see. What's your greatest failure?
Oh man.
And what positive thing did it trigger?
I've thought about this one for a couple of days. I'll go with the small event was, or the singular event was when I studied for months and months for this LSAT, which is your entrance exam to law school. And I drove to Carrollton, Georgia, which was an hour and a half from Athens, maybe 2 hours.
Yeah.
Spent the night in a hotel before, get up, go take the test, and just completely freak out, you know, so uncertain of whatever I was answering. And with the LSAT, you have the option of canceling your score. Basically, that you just as if you didn't take it.
Oh my gosh.
Because otherwise, if you take it and you register a bad score, you can always take it again, but the schools are going to take that bad score into account. So I was weak enough to where I had canceled my score, which is just, you know, just made me feel weak, right? What came out of it was really, though, fortunately, it turned into resilience and kind of an absolute will to not have that happen again.
Yeah.
Right. So, I took it again 3 months later, and fortunately, I did well enough where I got a scholarship to UGA, which made my decision very easy to go. Right.
You're just there.
There's no way I would have done that.
You started law school like in the fall after you graduated.
Right. Graduated in May. Started in September.
No messing around.
No. Yeah. Stayed with lived with my fraternity brothers. It was again prolonged adolescence, but it was it was what I needed. I was not ready for the real world at 22.
When I got out of college, I went into the real world. I was not ready for it.
Yeah.
And my roommate was my cousin, and he was in law school at SMU. And I would just like come home from working 8 to 5 or whatever. And he's like sitting by the pool, like, you know, it's like you law school. Huh? I see what this is. It's like college, but you're all 21 years old now. So that's great. All right. Now, this is my rapid fire round of questions here.
Love it.
What's your morning ritual?
Oh, man. What would I do without it? So I get up 5:35 with the alarm, go in, drink a big cup. You and I are big sort of health guys in the sense of we need to like, what's the best thing to get me going for the day, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I drink a warm glass of lemon water, get the digestive system going.
That's good.
Drink a coffee, and then I got this new thing I got to show. It's called Athletic Greens.
Okay, yeah.
You heard of it?
Yeah.
And it gives me so much energy. It's awesome. So basically, it's 5:35. Do that. I read my news.
How do you do Athletic Greens? You like put it in water and mix it up? Yeah, exactly. I've done it before. I started doing Symbiotica Super Greens.
Okay.
It's like a gel pack.
Okay.
I just like it's easier for the Athletic Greens. I don't like the taste, but
oh really?
No,
you know
I might have to try them again. It's been a while.
I'm used to drinking so much of that protein crap. I don't, my taste buds are null. But anyway, do that till I read the news till 6. Go to the gym, come back at 7, get the kids ready for school, take them to school, go to work.
Gym, weights, cardio, that kind of deal.
I'm too old for the. You know, I try to do all body weight stuff, cardio, and then body weight, and then you know, I'm too old. The joints will hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
I need to do more yoga like you.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
I love the yoga and I like doing HIIT classes. I like class atmospheres. I do weights too. I lift weights like a couple times a week in my house, just like dumbbells and push-ups and sit-ups and stuff like that, but nothing crazy. But yeah,
HIIT classes are great. Yeah, HIIT, that's what, keep yourself constantly like on your toes, right?
Yes. What is your favorite hotel or vacation destination? I love to travel, so I like to
do
this for selfish purposes so I can know where I need to go.
Okay, next. So favorite hotel is this little bed and breakfast we stayed at in Florence, Italy on our honeymoon.
Oh, I've never been to Italy before.
Oh, man.
Gotta
go. You would love it. It's so really such a welcoming place. And, you know, Rome and... Naples are a little seedy and touristy and all that stuff, but Florence and Amalfi Coast and, you know, Cinque Terre.
Do you watch The White Lotus?
No.
It's a show on HBO and this season it takes place in Italy and it just really makes me want to go there. You have to, if you're watching anything on TV, like go watch The White Lotus.
I'll put it on the list.
It's amazing. I'm sure you have lots of time to do that.
Yeah. I'm just finishing up Billions. You know, my wife and I, we watch one show at a time, and it's taken us about a year and a half to go through Billions, but I'm almost done with it.
I can't do Billions since Bobby Axelrod left.
So that's where we're at. We have not gone to the point where he's gone. I couldn't do it without him either.
Oh, no. He's
everything.
The show.
Yeah, he's everything.
Yeah.
You and I should wear hoodies like him, by the way. We could pull it off.
We could.
Yeah.
I do, actually.
You kind of do.
I do that. I'm not doing it right now. If you're at my house instead of the office, like I would probably have a hoodie.
I love it.
Okay. So what's your favorite restaurant? We both travel a lot.
So I know.
And we take people to dinner for a living.
I know.
So that's always.
I love Budokan in New York.
Oh, dude. That is
isn't it the best?
First restaurant. I stay at like the Standard Hotel. Yep. I go to Budokan. It's my New York City ritual. And I've been doing that since like 2009 when I first went there for business. And I loved it so much every time I go back. Yep. All my friends and I'll just text my friends and clients like Budokan, I'm coming to town. Let's go.
It's the coolest restaurant in the country. I mean, it's so cool.
So great.
There's the whole setup there. I mean, you go down, you're like 40 feet down below the ground when you go in there. It's incredible.
I love that area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't been there since the High Line came in. I got to go back.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Hell yeah. okay. What's a book that you'd like to talk about today?
Oh, Getting to Yes.
You've heard it,
Getting to Yes.
What's the author's name? Do you remember?
Oh, I knew you'd ask me that.
We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. But it's a classic. It's like, and the whole premise of the book is win-win or don't, you can't do it. And that's sort of our secret, that's our business philosophy. It's like long-term relationships are built on win-win outcomes and good negotiations are built on win-win, win-win outcomes. Otherwise, you don't settle it.
Yeah.
Right? Because the other way, you're just creating an enemy out of one or the other. So, great book. Highly recommend it. And it's scientific, you know? I mean, HBS did this long, long study, a clinical study, if you will, about negotiation tactics. And so it's the real deal. It's not theoretical.
Yeah. Love it. What is your favorite quote?
Oh, you're going to make fun of me for this. So, it's not that inspirational, but it's a story where my friends were going to the SEC championship in Atlanta and they were in this old, they had rented like an old Lincoln limousine, you know, like from Wedding Singer.
Yeah, yeah.
And they broke down on the highway, like the off ramp going to the Georgia Dome.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden this Cadillac limo drives slowly by and like stops in front of them. Ric Flair pops out of the rooftop and says, "Should have bought a Cadillac." Woo! Oh my God. So that is like, whenever that, to me, that just means, you know, just enjoy the moment. Like, whenever something goes good, just count your blessings. I always say it. If we're playing golf and I make a get a good putt, I'm like, "Should have bought a Cadillac." That's just
should've
my thing.
Should have bought a Cadillac.
I don't know why. It just expresses sort of that, you know, enjoy the moment. Be thankful for what you got.
Yeah. That's classic. Oh my gosh. Okay. What song? When I started this podcast, I wanted to actually play songs on it, but now I'm told that the episodes might get ripped from the interwebs. And I don't want that because this is where we live on forever, my friend.
I know.
So, what song do you want to share? And I'll put like links to Apple Music and Spotify in the show notes.
Yep. Well, don't forgive me if this is cheesy, but it's a modern country song, which I know you're probably not a big fan of, but it's By Dirt. You heard of By Dirt?
No, I haven't.
But just in our industry, I mean,
By Dirt.
By Dirt. So
I
hope that you don't get busted for the lyrics are By Dirt, find the one you can't. I mean, it's just.
Who sings it?
Oh, let's see. It's not an artist you and I have heard of necessarily. Who is this guy? Jordan Davis.
Jordan
and Luke
Davis.
Bryan is in it with him. I'm sure Luke Bryan produced it, right? And is making all the money on it.
But, By Dirt.
By Dirt. It's all about just sort of
that's putting, what you do, dude.
It's just about, you know, being long-term thinking is what it really is about.
Yeah.
So I like it.
By land, they're not making any more of it.
Exactly.
Mark Twain.
Well, that's the quote. It says,
I love that quote.
You can thank the good Lord for it because they ain't making any more of it. There you go.
Yeah, they need to throw Mark Twain some royalties off of that one too.
No.
Okay. I'm going to check it out. No, I really like all kinds of music. I used to not like techno, and now I like techno. I like electronic music, but I like old country. I know everything about country music from its inception to current day. I mean, it just depends, you know?
It's just like, too poppy today, current day, right?
But you know what? Like, I've been in the music industry. That was my first job. And anybody who you're hearing on the radio or doing that, like, they have so much talent and they work their asses off. And you can go talk shit about people and say, like, they sold out or whatever.
Right, right.
And I used to have that mindset about people. And I had a chip on my shoulder when I was in the music industry, like, screw that. It's too poppy, like, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But when you really get into it, it's its own business. And to go rise to that level requires extremely hard work and a lot of talent. And then a huge amount of luck.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people out there trying to do that. So whenever I see people that are at that level now, it's just like respect.
It's just respect.
And if the song speaks to me, the song speaks to me. And I don't make any judgments on anything other than if that happens. And if it doesn't, then still like respect to you for being an artist and a creator.
Yeah.
But I used to like talk shit about music all the
time.
An artist. And, I'm
older. That hard work.
Older and
wiser. You're very wise.
I know not to, you know, like it's a waste of negative energy. Why would I do that? Okay. And moving right along. This has been such a great chat today. Do you have a charity or cause you'd like to let us know about?
Yeah, so we...
That you donate to or support?
Yeah, it's childhood cancer.
Okay.
You know, it's our third owner in the business. He lost a child to cancer, and he's really brought us into the, you know, what it's all about and all the abilities to support the improvement, really both on cures, but also, you know, treatment and making life more tolerable when you're dealing with it. So, I mean, there's nothing more heartbreaking than child with cancer, right? So,
no doubt.
Just want to keep that in mind. He hosts a big event every September that raises a ton of money. And it's
is great. It his own kind of deal where he raises it and then he goes and distributes it to where he thinks
his wife is. She's made this her.
Is it a foundation or
it's
something?
It's a foundation.
You know what it's called off the top of your head?
Or? Yeah, the Ferris Barani Foundation.
Ferris Barani Foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shoot me that and I'll put that in the show notes so people can check it out. My daughter has type 1 diabetes. I think we've discussed. And when she got diagnosed, she had to go to like intensive care at Children's Medical Center here. And when I went in there, I mean, it's super scary when this happened. I didn't know anything about type 1 diabetes.
Yeah.
But like when you're at Children's Medical Center in that wing of the hospital, you realize really quickly you're very fortunate to have that diabetes be your issue with your child
right.
and not something else when you're seeing these kids with cancer. And it's just, it's heartbreaking. And it's just, you know, I wish it didn't happen. But
of course,
all we can do is go support.
Do what we can to support it.
Such things.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I already know the answer to this. Probably. I don't know. I'm not gonna guess your answers. But if you had $100 million in a briefcase, I think you'd do the same thing I would do with it. But what would you invest it in if you had to pick one thing?
It's gonna be dirt, right?
Yeah. Industrial real estate.
It's dirt in a port market.
Dirt in a port market.
Entitled for container storage stacking. I mean,
yes.
You can retire on that.
I'm all over that. That's it. That's exactly what I would do. What's the number one thing moving forward to go get more equity? Or what's on your bucket list, vision board? It doesn't have to be business, obviously. What are you really hoping to do in the future?
You're going to laugh at this too, but you're going to think I'm just trying to get credit at home. But my wife is... really just a, she's just...
What's her name?
Jen.
Jen.
Okay. Yeah. She's just a super talented person who, you know, tried her best to be a stay-at-home mom and then realized she just naturally had too much in her head to do, right?
Yeah,
she just had so much she wanted to do.
I feel that.
She started a home-based business and was top 1% of 35,000 people in the sales part of the company. And she didn't make any real money, you know? And I was like, honey, this is not, your talent is transcends this role. So she's started her own business, bottom line. She started her own online, it's starting online, but it'll eventually be storefront of like home decor or retail.
Cool.
And it's like mission-based. It's, you know, all unique sort of heirloom quality made by, I mean, we've got one vendor who, it's a charity that rescues women from human trafficking and has them make these, you know, tablecloths and things like that. You know, just totally unique, but with a goal and mission behind it. So I just want to support her. I think she's going to be, I want to see that business be, I just know she's going to be so successful.
What's
so
it called?
Cool. It's called Half Past Seven.
Half Past Seven. Is it like on Instagram?
Or? Oh, yeah, for sure. Half Past Seven Home.
At Half Past Seven Home.
Yes.
Put that in
check
the show notes too.
Check it out.
Right on. And thanks so much for your time. Tell everyone where they can track you down.
Enlight Real Estate, enlightre.com or LinkedIn. LinkedIn me.
I love your LinkedIn.
I love your LinkedIn.
I know. You can be a little more aggressive though because you own the company. And, but you know that I agree with you on all that. And I'm like texting you when you post your controversial post. So definitely go follow David Burt on LinkedIn. He does great follow and track him down and do a deal with him and become friends with him like me.
Please.
It's been a pleasure, my friend.
Man, I'm so honored for you to ask me to do this. Yes. It was a blast.
Thanks everybody for tuning in to this episode of Truckin' On. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, don't be shy. Please like, share, leave a 5-star review so that we can keep doing what we're doing. Stay safe out there on the road and keep on trucking. Adios.
I'm trucking on.